Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Susan Weed. My name is Daniel Michael, and tonight, Susan will be discussing the healing and magical properties of mugwort. So join us in our circle right here on Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hosts, Susan Weed. Welcome to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Susan Weed. My name is Daniel Michael. I'm the founder and co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And, of course, we're very honored to have Susan join us as one of our hosts. It's been a little while now, I guess, a few months. I see she's there in the queue. And welcome, Susan.
Green blessing. Are you in one of the snow areas?
We are actually just fine. There was some snow here, but the roads are pretty clear. You can pretty much drive anywhere. So it's really not too bad. Unless, since I've been inside working on things, it got worse, which who knows. but I got in kind of late tonight working. So, I was able to pretty much drive even on the side streets. So, yeah, it's Virginia.
Yeah. No, one of the days last week, I went to sleep, and it was kind of hailing out, and I was so shocked when I woke up the next morning, there was 8 new inches of snow.
Wow.
Yeah, we have just been snowed on and snowed on and snowed on to the point where we don't know where to put it anymore. You can't see my mailbox at all. It's just like a hole through the snowbank that's just putting those mail in.
You're going to have to get some maple syrup or whatever your tradition is, and you're just going to have to start eating it.
That's it.
Out of it.
You know, when I first got interested in herbs because I was interested in food. And I was trying out, you know, cuisines from different parts of the world, and it was pretty obvious that there's kind of the same basic foods that we're eating wherever we're eating in the world. But what really makes the food different is the different herbs and spices that are used in it. And that really fascinated me. And it was quite a while before I realized that these plants were also medicines. And then yet another while before I realized that I wasn't the only crazy, that there was actually a lineage, that there was actually something that was going on right now on the planet, that people were all over the planet were using herbs for medicine and healing. And being a feminist, I was quite thrilled to read that the World Health Organization says that 90% of all the health care given on any given day on this planet is given by women in their own homes. And that usually involves using plants. And so I began to be actively curious about this as well as about the plants. Like, what is this connection between women and the plants, you know? Certainly, it's not that men aren't involved with plants. There's some very notable men who have been extremely involved with plants, from George Washington Carver to Gatti, you know, to all kinds of people. But in the general way, these are kind of notable men because they're doing something that isn't so usually done by men, whereas lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of women are involved with plants. And
know them.
As I was researching this, I came across this amazing, to me, statement. And it said that the way that illiterate people knew where the healer or the midwife, the herbalist, lived was that Artemisia vulgaris was growing next to her door. And so that was like the advertising, right? Like if you saw the hut, the cottage, whatever, and this plant was growing there, that said, you know, as clearly as, you know, Susan's herb shop, what was going on there. This was so much so that as people became more urbanized and moved into the cities, they would hang a bunch of dried Artemisia vulgaris on the door in, they were in places where it couldn't be planted. And when even that couldn't be done, they would paint it on the door. Now, the Artemisias are a fairly large group of related plants, and they are a genus in the family Asteraceae. The Aster family is one of the biggest of the plant families, and includes plants like dandelion, echinacea, chamomile, lettuce, artichoke, burdock, goldenrod, ragweed. Very big, very diverse family, and as I said, the Artemisias are one group within this family. And almost all of the Artemisias are noted for their silvery leaves. Some are more silvery than others. Some of them, like Dusty Miller, which some people grow in their gardens, is like so silvery, top and bottom of the leaf, that it, you know, you think the moon is shining on it. It's so almost white. And it's an Artemisia. And sagebrush out in the desert areas is an Artemisia. That's Artemisia tridentata. And you think about the silver shimmer of the sagebrush, especially after a light rain. Artemisia vulgaris also has these silvery whitish hairs on it, but mostly on the underside of the leaf. So that when you look at it from above, although it's a light green and a kind of shimmery because of that, you don't really see the hairs. Well, Daniel, I got so excited by this that I decided that I had to grow some of this next to my door.
Ah.
And I started looking around for it. Well, it turns out that although it is happy growing just about anywhere, it's not always easy to find in the country. But this plant really loves the city. And so I went to the nearest big city to me, 100 miles away, which is Manhattan. And there was plenty of Artemisia vulgaris there. And there was some in the Bronx, and there was some in Brooklyn, and there was some in Queens, but the piece that I brought home came from Staten Island. That one piece that I planted next to my door has spread almost 30 feet down the driveway now.
Wow.
Taking out my mint bed on the way. And people who garden look at me and say, this plant can take out a mint bed. I'm like, yeah. This Artemisia vulgaris, which in German is called Beifuß, which literally means underfoot. Right, and vulgaris, what does that mean? That means common, right? It's a common Artemisia. And many of the Artemisias are kind of common plants, and people kind of shove on them. So the Artemisia vulgaris makes an underground network of roots which prevents any other plant from growing. We say be very careful where you decide to plant this. I didn't realize this when I brought my little sprig home and tucked it in right next to my door to say an herbalist lives here. So one day, some years after I had planted my piece, and it was growing well and it made actually quite a big bed, and I sat down and lovely day, and I said, how are you today, Kronwort? As we recall, I don't talk out loud to the plants. I said this in my mind. Mm-hmm. And the plant, which also doesn't talk out loud, but talked to me in my mind, said, don't call me Mugwort.
Ah.
And I said, well, that's what all the books call you, Artemisia vulgaris, Mugwort. She said, I have nothing to do with the drunken fantasies of those who have their noses in mugs. Well, a little research turned up that one of the reasons that Artemisia vulgaris is called mugwort is that it was used to brew beer. So she was right about drunken fantasies. And to me, it's a little interesting how this happened. Hops is the herb that we primarily use for brewing beer.
Yes.
And hops is in the marijuana family.
Mm-hmm.
So just as some people and some governments are uneasy with marijuana, some people and some governments have been uneasy with hops. There was a period, especially in England, where it was actually punishable by death if you grew hops.
Hmm.
Do you remember what somebody who smoked marijuana was called in the 20s? In the 1920s?
Would they use the term hophead?
That's exactly what they were called, a hophead.
Oh, okay.
Right, and that's why. Because hops and marijuana are in the same family. As a matter of fact, at one herbal conference, I said, now, theoretically, you could take a marijuana root, graft a hops vine onto it, and grow hops that contain THC.
Hmm.
And one of the herbalists, whose name I won't mention to protect his innocence here, said,
right.
It's how I made my way through college, was by growing THC-fortified hops.
Wow.
He said, in fact, it's quite easy to do. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So during this time when you couldn't grow hops and it was, like you were going to be killed if you grew hops, people looked around for other plants that they could use in brewing beer that would be somewhat similar to hops. And if you look at kind of alternative common names for plants, you will see a lot of them are called mug this or ale that. And that's why. So Artemisia vulgaris became the mugwort because it has many of the same effects that hops do. First of all, it is psychoactive in the same way that hops is. We know that, from this link with marijuana. Not that we could smoke Kronwort or hops to get the same effect as smoking marijuana. But it also influences some of the same receptors in the brain, especially when we smell it. Hops pillows have long been used to kind of, give people visions and put them to sleep. And all we're doing is smelling the pollen of the hops. And the same thing with the Artemisias. Almost all of them Artemisias have been burned as smudge. I mentioned Artemisia tridentata, sagebrush. And, of course, it is the classic sage that is used as a smudge.
Mm.
That smoke has psychoactive properties. Again, we're not talking like, you're going to go wandering down the highway here. I mean just, an increase in mental alertness, an increase in sensory awareness, an increase in presence, being here right now. and the ability to hold your attention and focus on what's going on right now. So some of the reasons why we would use Artemisia as a smudge. Artemisia vulgaris can also be used as a smudge. Don't have to go to the desert and get Tridentata. Vulgaris works just fine. Matter of fact, let me tell you a kind of funny story. I had harvested so much Artemisia vulgaris one year that I had to store some of it down in the house where the live-in apprentices. And we have talking stick every morning with the apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the apprentices kept coming to talking stick with a dream or two or three dreams. And I kind of, you know, wondered about that. But I thought, you know, well, maybe she's just, you know, she has a lot of dreams. She's used to talking about them. And then soon her apprentice sisters kept coming to talking stick with one or two or three dreams. I'm like, whoa, you know, this is really interesting. And then suddenly it hit me that she was staying in the room where I was storing the Artemisia vulgaris. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I wonder if just the smell could be having that much effect on her. And so I said to her, oh, you know, store there. And she said, oh, yes, I found some. I hope you don't mind. I've been burning it as a smudge.
Hmm.
And so by burning it as a smudge, she activated her ability to recall her dream. And then as she kept smudging with it night after night, the smell permeated the house enough that her apprentice sisters began having more dreams, too. Now, Artemisia vulgaris, just the dried leaves, is very well known as dream pillow material. And so once I harvested my first dried leaves from the plants that I had planted, and I put them in a little bag and I slept with it, sure enough, I had dreams and I easily remember them. But, well, you know, I have enough scientific training to find that suspect. So with a couple of friends, we decided to see if we could make an experiment where we could actually see if cronewort would cause someone who didn't know anything about it to have more dreams or more vivid dreams or remember their dreams better or do anything with their dreams. And so the three of us decided to make a dream pillow for each of our mothers and to send each of our mothers a cronewort dream pillow with a note that says, Happy Mother's Day, and nothing else. Put this in your pillow and sleep with it. And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, all of our mothers had called up and told us about amazing dreams that they had had or were having. So we found that a little more scientifically valuable or viable, shall we say. Certainly in all the lore and all the current use that I know of using cronewort in dream pillows, people are finding it quite amazingly effective. So the smudge, the smell, but also the physical actions of the cronewort are similar enough to those of hops that it made a pretty good substitute, too. Think about it. If you've had two or three beers, what do you need to do?
Well...
go to what my mother used to call the used coffee department.
Right, right.
It would be the used beer department, right? Hops is actually a diuretic. It increases...
Oh, okay, I got you. Yes. It took me a second there. Okay, I got you.
Well, we're on radio, so we have to be polite and kind of, you know, wander around what we might say in more vulgar company. And so that increase of urinary output that the hops has, it's not just that you've drunk three beers. There is actually more coming out than what you drank. And the hops does that, too. And that's actually very good for men's prostate.
Uh-huh.
All right. You know, now, we're not talking, you know, 20 or getting totally smashed here. what we're talking about, you know, reasonable amount of beer. And remember that in most of the world, the surface water is not safe to drink because of contamination from feces from animals and from humans. And so in order to have something safe to drink, we usually took the water and brewed it into beer. And the process of making the beer sterilizes the water and any of the pathogens that are in it. And hops and cronewort are both mild antibacterials and anti-infectives. They, you know, if you said, oh, you know, I have this terrible infection, I wouldn't say, oh, yes, well, we'll use, you know, cronewort to deal with it. But they do have that effect. Wormwood, Artemisia absinthium, is a very powerful killer of parasites and can be an antibacterial as well. So, again, this is kind of through the family. We can smell them. They have a powerful aroma, and those aromas often have antibacterial and antiseptic effects in the plants. So the cronewort is like the hops in that it's psychoactive, in that it increases urinary output, and also that it is a bitter. Bitters aid digestion. So the brewing of water into beer increases the amount of B vitamins. But can also have some other side effects. So the plants that we use, we don't just want to ferment grain. Because just that fermented grain, although the water would have been purified in the process, would probably cause intestinal upset. By adding an herb like hops or cronewort that is a bitter, we increase the capacity of the liver to deal with the food stuff that we are taking in. So the beer increases gut flora, and then the herbs that we've added to it improve the function of the digestive system. It's quite an amazing plant, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I went back another day and I said, okay, I'm not supposed to call you mugwort because you don't have anything to do with those drunken fantasies of people who have their noses in mugs. What should I call you? And she said, call me cronewort. Because I give the true vision of wise old age. Don't you see my silver hair on every leaf? And we've talked about the fact that the Artemisias are characterized by these silver hairs on their leaves. And we've just talked about the psychoactive effects of Artemisia vulgaris and its dreaming effects, which she says, I'm not going to give you drunken fantasies. I'm going to actually give you true visions. The dreams and the visions that you will get from using me are going to be those that you can count on. And I felt so touched, you know, that she was showing me how careful she was. Now, these white hairs on the backs of the leaves of Artemisia vulgaris are actually harvested. And collected. And in mass are called moxa. And they burn without going out. Remember that we just talked about the Artemisias being used as smudges?
Yes.
And that, Yes, and so if you've ever burned a sage smudge, you know, you light it, and this stuff just stays lit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a fire. It's just kind of glowing and smoking, smudging, but it stays lit. It stays lit. It stays lit. And it's these silver hairs that are the part that's staying lit. So when we take a mass of it and we light it, we have a healing technique called moxibustion, the burning of moxa. And this is one of the most respected of the healing techniques in China. You can go to Chinatown and you can buy what's called a moxa stick. It looks like a cigar, a little longer, maybe almost twice as long as most cigars. And you can light the end of, tear the paper off and light the end of it. And you use that moxibustion, indirect moxibustion, by kind of rotating it in circles and zigzags near an area that's sore. And it is said to fill qi and to ease the pain of congestion. For instance, after a woman has a baby, there's a technique that's called mother roasting, in which you do indirect or direct moxibustion on the woman's back, in her kind of lower to mid-back area, to tonify and strengthen the uterus, the ligaments of the uterus, everything that was used in giving birth to that baby, so that you'd be strong and healthy.
Hmm.
And not suffer any ill effects from the energy that it took to give birth to that baby. Again, the burning of moxa is said to fill qi. It brings energy in to the body. So the cases where we wouldn't want to use moxibustion would be what the Chinese call true heat, something that is overheated, like we have a gallbladder going into spasms. We probably would not want to use moxibustion on that. Or a toothache, you know, where there's true heat, right? We wouldn't want to do that. But a joint ache responds really, really well to it. It's very interesting as you hold the moxa stick fairly close, but not, of course, on the skin. And as I said, move it around. And it, as it fills, it feels very warm and wonderful to the person who's receiving the treatment. And when the area is filled, they will suddenly glare at you and say, "You just burned me," because it goes from a sensation of pleasant warmth to, "Ouch, that's too much," like that, just on the turn of a nanosecond. And then your moxibustion session is done. So this is a common plant throughout the world. Artemisia, the genus, there's some growing near you. Artemisia vulgaris, doesn't have to be that one. They're all fascinating and interesting plants. There are many different artemisias that can be used. The more strongly scented they are, the more psychoactive abilities they have. So I hope this year, as the year starts to green, you'll see if you can find some cronwort. It's one of my favorite early salad greens. The young, tender leaves, as they're just emerging in the spring, they really taste good. And once again, we have come to the end of the show. My goodness gracious. Come and visit me at susanweed.com. A new e-zine this week is about breakfast, a wonderful recipe for my Wild and Oats breakfast, and visit the wisewomanbookshop.com. And I think we should come back next week and talk about the second of what I call the triple goddess herbs. The triple goddess is maiden, mother, and crone. We've just talked about cronewort. Let's talk about motherwort next week.
Okay, motherwort.
All right.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
Three blessings, everybody.
All right. Very good show. A lot of good information. I'm going to listen to this one back.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, and have a great evening.
Till next week.
Till next week. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Wee.